You're listening to The People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
Here are your American Gladiators. Ice, Ice, Baby. Jedi. Play.
Play.
Do the thunder shake. Storm. Laser. Disaster. Power. Violet. Nitro.
There he is.
Save the best for last, Nitro.
I totally forgot about Ice Ice Baby. My personal favorite American Gladiator.
If you weren't listening to the People Show before that break,
yeah,
you have no idea what the heck is going on right now.
If you're just tuning in for hour four of the podcast, please go and listen to hour three, and you may figure out why we're talking about American Gladiators. Things that are dead you would like to bring back. That's the context of American Gladiators. I just Blaze and Blazer. There's no way you can hear that and not think about Dodgeball when Dwight Goodman, Ben Stiller, introduces the Globo Gym Purple Cobras. Blaze. Blazer. It's just like, you couldn't get more original with the second name, you know, just Blaze and Blazer. Come on. Really? That's what we're going with?
I don't know how you remember every line from Dodgeball, man. I don't know how you do it.
Can't forget 7-time Russian dodgeball champion Fran Stanislavovich Defedomensky. Anyways, okay. It's enough.
Unbelievable.
Was there an American Gladiator event you could do? Like you would think you'd be good at if you remember any of them? Obviously,
yeah,
like tug of war.
I think Gauntlet or whatever it was called. Remember where you run through the thing and they. Yeah. I think I could do that.
You could do Gauntlet?
I think so.
Assault? Atlasphere. I would have been good at the Atlasphere. I got a low center of gravity.
I think even with the Gauntlet, I think you could do that. You could just run underneath everything.
Yes. Joust. Powerball was fun too. All right.
Wasn't there another game as well? Like Ricochet? Ricochet? Am I?
Rocketball?
I don't know. Ricochet kind of... Or was that an American Gladiator's name? I don't even know. For some reason, I'm thinking that as well.
All right.
That's enough of that.
That's enough of that. It's now official. We will talk more about American Gladiators in 2022 than we will the CFL.
Ooh. Rough.
Harsh? Maybe. Oilers are losing again. Update from Madison Square Garden. Tough look for the Edmontons.
Also a tough look for Mikko Koskinen, who it was a bit of a deflection on the most recent goal.
Yeah.
Still one he should have had.
He's just too much movement, you know, in the crease. It's leaving too many holes. You know, the idea of the Pacific Division right now is really interesting. So we talked earlier in the show, hour one, about if our opinion is changing on the Vancouver Canucks, given the run of form, 8 wins in 9 games. But they are currently, going into tonight's games, 2 points out of a playoff spot. Now, that shouldn't be indicative of what their chances are, because it's not. There's quite a few teams ahead of them. Pretty much all the teams have more games in hand. And so while 2 points may seem like not much, and it isn't, it's not quite that simple. But during this run, the Canucks have 17 points in the 8 games under Boudreaux. So since Boudreaux took over, they've got 17 points. The LA Kings have 15. So they haven't really gained a ton on the Kings. But Calgary hasn't played much, haven't collected a lot of points in the games they have played in that time frame. Oilers have been downright awful. Have 6 points in 10 games. Looks like it'll be 6 points in 11 games since Boudreaux took over the Canucks. The Sharks haven't been good either. They've started to fall back to the pack as we expected. Anaheim is barely above 500 since Boudreaux took over the Vancouver Canucks. So a lot of the things that maybe we expected to start happening with the teams ahead of the Canucks and that their hot starts weren't going to last kind of has started to happen, Randeep. But even with all of that, the Canucks are still a long way away from a 95-point pace.
Yeah, the dangerous thing now is that you can be a very hot team in the Pacific Division like the Canucks are, but in a couple of those games, giving up single points to the team that you're chasing or you're in that discussion with, that hurts you, man.
Yeah.
Like, making inroads in this division are going to be difficult. We haven't even talked about the wild card because Colorado, they're going to shoot up the standings. They're going to get better. Dallas, who I should mention have 5 games in hand on the Canucks, they're going to pass them in the standings as well. So I'm not even thinking about the wild card at this point in time because there are some teams that should probably surpass the Canucks once they start catching up with games. But when you look at that Pacific Division, Anaheim is, I think, the most interesting situation to watch right now. If they continue to trend in this direction where they maybe lose a few more games, then they're falling back down to earth. Those 41 points are going to be very, very, you know, attainable for the Canucks. They can catch up to this team.
Yeah. Anaheim should be sellers, though. Like, we talked about it with Sarah Valley in hour two. Like, that's a team that wasn't planning on being a playoff team this year. Like, Bob Murray, before he was resigned from the position, given his transgressions, he didn't make a single move in the offseason. There wasn't one ad that he made to that roster.
I think the question is also, was he allowed to make any moves as well?
Right.
Right?
Fair enough, given he was kind of on the hot seat. But now you look at it, they've got Lindholm, Raquel, Manson as UFAs. For a team that's kind of like halfway through a rebuild, that's quite the haul they can get back in assets trading those three guys right now and adding more picks and prospects to the current group that they've already got.
They are in a position that kind of reminds me of the Canucks maybe a few years ago when they traded for Toffoli, where you've got young players and you're trending towards direction. You have a choice to make, though.
Yeah.
Jim Benning at the time decided to go after the player and get the playoff experience.
Yeah.
I think if you're Anaheim, to your point with those UFAs, you do the opposite. If you make the playoffs, if you have meaningful games in April, that's great. But the long game here is Zegras, you know, having those players like Drysdale and adding those draft picks and maybe using them to get ready-made NHL players that you have under control. So I'm with you. I think them playing the long game here would be smarter, which benefits the Canucks, right?
Yeah.
Which, if that is a move that whoever's running that organization decides to make, that would be smart. Outside of that, Vegas and Calgary, I think they have the staying power. I fully expect those teams to be number one and two in the Pacific Division by the time the season's up.
Mm-hmm.
The Canucks competition, really, to me, is Anaheim, Edmonton, LA. I don't think San Jose is going to stick around very long.
Yeah.
And for that third spot in the Pacific, those are not world beaters. And if Edmonton continues to play like this, like we're seeing them lose again, this East Coast road trip could be the end of the line for Dave Tippett.
Yeah.
You don't know how much worse they, you know, they're, if they're dropping points like this, I think the Canucks have a decent shot to get back into this. But you cannot give up single points in those divisional games because those are the ones that hurt you long term. Like, it's still a long shot to get back into that discussion, but it's attainable.
Yeah. They might have just as much chance of getting the third spot in the Pacific as they do the second wild card.
I think so.
Yeah. Given where teams are trending in the Central Division. It's all of this is to say, a month ago when Boudreaux took over, playoffs seem like a pipe dream. We talked about how our opinions are potentially changing of this roster. has your thought on their chances, of course it's changed, so I should phrase it differently. How much more optimistic are you that the playoffs are possible for the Vancouver Canucks this season?
I think you should be very optimistic in the sense that the roster is being utilized properly.
Right.
They're utilizing their strengths, which is playing faster, playing off the rush, being aggressive on the forecheck. This is not a team that is built to play slow. We saw, you know, I think playing off the cycle anyways, which is a slower game, is something that was being attempted previously. It didn't work well. It simply did not work well. This is much more aggressive. And I made this, comparison early on in the year and even before the season, is that you have a strong forward group and you have a goalie that you can rely on. He can stand on his head.
Yeah.
It was a comparison to Winnipeg when they made the playoffs, is that it might not be the best defensive team, but given the two strengths that you have is that you can score points, you've got a deep forward group, and you've got a number one goalie who should be amongst the best, and he's proven that he is. And that's that. If they play to that strength, I think they do have enough to be a part of the conversation, given that factor and the fact that we just talked about. Which of those, who's that third Pacific Division team that really fear, that you fear if you're the Canucks? Calgary and Vegas are the top two. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, it's very realistic that LA can go on a losing streak. Edmonton is on a losing streak. The Canucks just have to avoid a lengthy losing streak. Their margin for error is very slim now because of that terrible start. But it's doable because all the other teams around them jockeying for that third spot in the Pacific, they're not world beaters. They're actually, as of right now, some of them are very mediocre teams, if not bad.
It's changed quite a bit, the idea of the Canucks making the playoffs. Now, like, they're still behind San Jose when it comes to points percentage. Like, the only teams they are ahead of points percentage-wise, Seattle, Arizona, Chicago. That's it. Every other team in the West, still better than Vancouver. That's a lot of teams to climb over. And there's two factors here that I think are very important to the success of the Canucks for the remainder of this season and the potential of it and how it could affect the potential success. Number one, Jim Rutherford has continued to mention if we're going to make trades, younger players and draft picks are what I'm looking to acquire. Now, maybe he's bluffing us all, but I think we could take him at his word in that he's pretty adamant and seems to know that this team isn't good enough to be a cup contender. So, what pieces could come off this roster that help the Canucks acquire younger players and draft picks? That could affect what this roster looks like. The other factor that I think is going to be huge, not just for the Canucks, but for pretty much every Canadian team as games continue to get postponed. Ottawa just got postponed against the Seattle Kraken. The one thing about this second half now is the schedule. That's got to be on your mind. The Canucks aren't playing for an entire week right now. This is essentially a bye week that they are having right now. It's a mini training camp they're getting under Bruce Boudreaux. But you know what? Got to play these games at some point. You're going to have a lot of four-game weeks, grind of a schedule. It's going to come back around in the end that you've played, what, two games, three games in the last 2 weeks? So what does that schedule look like? How many difficult spots are you being put in? Think about last Thursday. Canucks, yeah, they got a point against the LA Kings, but they got handled in that game. Got a point because of Jaro Halak. This team's got goaltending that'll steal it points every once in a while, but how often is it going to have to do that when you're playing back-to-back threes and fours? Like, this second half, you're going to be playing four games a week pretty much every single week. That's how the schedule is going to turn once everything starts to get more regular for the NHL schedule, and they work towards completing 82 games.
Yeah, the schedule is going to be a game changer. It feels like we're going to have a second schedule release with the NHL, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where you're going to be like, all right, what does this February schedule look like? And I think the other game changer here is, and it's something that we're living with on a daily basis, but down the road, when you have teams that are jockeying for position, when every point matters, and we're seeing this play out in Toronto today, in Ottawa today. Austin Matthews, test positive. Thomas Chabot, test positive. That's still a thing, guys.
Yeah.
That's still very much a thing. On a nightly basis, we're still going to be watching for updates. We're going to still be watching on Twitter and waiting for the team's release to come out to say, all right, this player is now in the COVID-19 protocol. Unfortunately, that's going to also be a very random factor here as things go along. Until there's some sort of change, if there's a change coming from the NHL, that's also going to be. So the schedule is one thing, but if you're in a position where your star player is not playing, those are points off the board. Like, potentially, those are points off the board as well. So I think it's easy to make predictions, and this team is trending, but there's so much random, you know, randomization that is going to be a part of the aspect and, you know, the future of for every team. So what I do like about this situation for the Canucks is that most of those teams in the Pacific don't scare you as much anymore because they're human again. They're mortal again. Those great starts for the San Jose's and the LA's of the world are not as intimidating as they were maybe a month ago or 2 months ago for San Jose. And, you know, LA had a great stretch after a terrible start to the year. But there's going to be a regression on the Canucks front too. And it's how low are your valleys is the question, right? Hey, we know they're hitting their peak right now, but you have to avoid those three-game losing streaks. You have to pick up points. And if you don't do that, especially in the middle of January, when you've got Tampa, Florida, and, you know, a number of other strong teams that you're playing, Carolina, you have to be extremely, extremely careful that you are always picking up points and limiting those regulation losses, because you get a couple of those in a row, this team doesn't really belt up that margin for error.
The two teams that are the surprises, Anaheim we talked about, the other is Nashville, 42 points in 33 games. They've almost played so well to start the year that they've just got to play essentially 500 hockey to get to where they need to be above the playoff bar. That's scary because in the Central, you have St. Louis, Nashville, Minnesota, Colorado, Winnipeg, and Dallas. All of those teams, we thought, had a chance at the playoffs, maybe outside of Nashville. And you start thinking about all of the wild card spots, where they might be going. It looks like two of them are going to the Central, given how those teams are stacking up. All right, how are you reassessing the Canucks' playoff chances?
We got this text from Keith the Water Guy. I never felt the playoffs were out of the possibility. There's always been a lot of hockey remaining. I've always thought you guys wrote them off too early in terms of being out of the playoffs. That's a valid point. You know, rewind a month ago, and the way it was trending.
I mean, Randy, I'm sorry. Like, Keith, love you. You're a loyal listener to the show. The Canucks, even with this 8 wins and 9, yeah, and if you even go back to Travis Green, it's what? 10 wins and 12?
Yep.
An 11-point, like the other game, he got 1 point. So this is a long streak, and the Canucks are still so far back. So far back. It's still a long shot for them to make the playoffs. So I don't think we wrote them off too early. They've just put together a unpredictable streak that has brought them slowly back into the conversation.
No, it's still a very, very, very difficult road back, right? You talk about winning 8 of 10, picking up points in pretty much, you know, in 9 games out of those 10, and you are still in 6th position outside a wildcard spot, essentially. You're still second to last in the division. So you've got a long way to go, but I think there was an element of, hey, nothing's changing here, so therefore, if they don't change anything, they're done. They're done like dinner. And I think at that time, it was fair to have that because there was no change coming. Now, let's be real. How often do teams win a streak like this? It doesn't happen very often. Look at Philly. They got rid of their coach, and they're dropping games. Yeah, Winnipeg's won 2 straight, but...
They needed this just to get back into the race, Randy.
But that's the point, though, right?
Just to get back to 500, they needed this.
What is acceptable from these guys, or what is something that we can expect from them going forward here? Because that is one heck of a pace to come out with and Bruce Boudreaux and have that confidence in this team. But that January trip, and the reason I keep on going back to it is those are the real games that are going to matter big time. And it's great that they're able to do this, especially against divisional teams. But the true test is coming in the middle of this month.
Yeah,
like that is where the degree of difficulty is sky high on the road. You can't make use of those matchups at home. You're going to be playing some of the best teams in the NHL. And can you survive that stretch? That will be the most telling point, I think, thus far under the Bruce Boudreaux regime, is that how do you keep that confidence up when you're playing not only the 3 teams I mentioned, but Nashville, who's second in the Central? I don't know if you guys watched this weekend, but Ryan Johansson, he's having a pretty good year. All those overpaid guys that we were making fun of, and I'll be the first one to admit, those guys are actually putting up points this year. Those aren't going to be easy games.
Duchesne, Johansson, huge bounce back years for both of those guys. And Philip Forsberg has been absolutely lights out since coming back from injury. It's the People's Show, Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. Should we reset Wrong Answers Only? Because when we were on earlier, we're live on stream and on podcast, but the radio signal was out. So Wrong Answers Only on the People's Show. We do it pretty much every day. Wrong Answers Only. What will be the biggest Canuck story of 2022? What will be the biggest story? The biggest Canuck story of 2022. Wrong Answers Only.
And I came with Stan Smeal. We'll have a new hot dog on Steamer's hot dog stand. I'm going to call it the Initiator.
The Initiator.
The Initiator.
I like that.
It's going to initiate spice. Yep. It's going to be spicy like Stan's press conference that he had with Francesco Alcolini. Showing some passion. It's going to be a super spicy hot dog. It's the biggest story of 2022.
Wrong Answers Only. What will be the biggest Canucks story of 2022? The Canucks bring back Jim Benning as head scout.
Ooh.
Just like everybody said, he's a great scout, just not a great GM.
Just imagine that. Well, yeah, you know what? I considered all my options. I really like Vancouver. All things being equal, I'm staying here.
That would be pretty hilarious. Wrong Answers Only, send some in, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll get to some of the best answers coming up after the break. Also, you'll hear from Frank Saravalli again from earlier in the program, an update on the Canucks GM search. It's the People's Show, Sportsnet 650.
Now back to the People's Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, the People's Show, final segment. Wrong Answers Only filtering into the Dunbar Lumber text line, Randy, 650-650. Wrong Answers Only, what will be the biggest Canucks story of 2022?
This one, Halsey in Surrey.
Okay, Halsey.
Jim Rutherford trades Brandon Sutter to Calgary for Eric Goodbranson.
Uh-oh. How many right-shot defensemen are the Canucks going to have? Like, bad ones.
I was going to say, how many, they could use a few more, but of quality would be nice.
That's one of the things about trading for a right shot defenseman. Like, who are you getting rid of? Hamonic? Who, I mean, is in and out of the lineup like crazy.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Luke Shen, you're not getting rid of because...
Why would you?
No, he's been...
Great salary.
He's been doing well.
Great number.
Quinn likes him.
Tucker Pullman. Good luck.
That's a lot of term.
So, if you're going to acquire, maybe Tyler Myers. Who knows? Crazier things have happened.
T-Man 889 coming in with this one. The biggest story in 2022 for the Canucks. The Canucks drop their beer prices and start providing Cool Wet rags for Pettersson haters.
Got to get the Cool Wet rag in there.
Okay, I brought a Cool Wet rag.
This one, unsigned. The biggest story of 2022 for the Canucks. Super Socko becomes a Canucks sponsor. They change name to Super Hocko.
Just imagine that. People just slamming juice boxes at the Canucks game.
Of real fruit drink.
Yeah, orange drink. This one from Ryan in Chilliwack.
Okay.
The biggest story of 2022 for the Canucks, Elias Pettersson will strip his gear, then skate off the ice next game. Antonio Brown style.
Mm.
That's definitely a wrong answer.
Mike, Jake Virtanen is on the All-Russia team in the KHL. And last I checked, he was doing pretty well. So,
was it 16 points in 33 games or something? Thereabouts?
Yep. All right. That's wrong answers only here on the People's Show.
It's definitely a wrong answer.
We'll get to Frank Saravalli in just a minute. He had an update for us earlier on in the show about the Canucks GM search, and maybe closer than we originally thought. But while so much is going on with the NHL team and the NHL COVID pauses or postponements, the Canucks AHL team, the Abbotsford Canucks, has been going through it themselves. Chris Faber producing this fine program today, also covering the Abbotsford Canucks with Canucks Army, and is here every weekend with the Canucks warm-up alongside David Quadrelli, leading you into Canucks games on the weekend. Faber, what's happening with the Abbotsford Canucks?
Yeah, well, Dan, last segment you were kind of talking about how this is nice. Like, Canucks aren't playing a lot of games, but it's going to bite them in the butt in a little bit. That's kind of what's happening to the Abbotsford Canucks right now. They had postponements before Christmas, before New Year's, so a bunch of games kind of stapled all together. They also had, from what I heard, at least 9 players test positive for COVID, as well as staff members. So a big outbreak on the team, but they've kind of started to filter back over the past couple of days here. But starting Thursday, they are going to play 4 games in 5 nights at the Abbotsford Center. So that is going to be a busy weekend, which is kind of an extended weekend, because that's going to go from Thursday all the way to Monday. You're going to get a lot of hockey out of the Abbotsford Center when we won't be really having a lot at Rogers Arena. So I think Abbotsford Center is going to be getting near 50% for this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be a baseball-style series as well. You've got Bakersfield coming in, and that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a grind, as you mentioned, where right now everybody's getting a little bit healthy, but you do wonder about just that revised schedule and what kind of toll it'll take on the players, because, you know, you do have some additional players, but also on the AHL level, their favor, you know, there are players in the taxi squad for the main club. You know, last year we saw the AHL club work pretty hard. They were in a pretty tough spot. Do we anticipate something like that this year as well, or how are they coping with it thus far?
Yeah, I don't think that there's going to be any players on the taxi squad going into this weekend.
Yeah.
Because we saw Spencer Martin and Ashton Sonder get sent back down, which was good. And the Abbotsford Canucks got rid of Darren Brady, who was a guy that they picked up just kind of before the Christmas break as well. But I think that having Abbotsford so close is going to make the taxi squad like a completely different thing than it was last year. I think on top of that, the added rules where you can only be on there for 20 days. I think we saw that kind of take place today as Ashton Sautner and Spencer Martin were taken off, because you would like to see Spencer Martin be that guy on the taxi squad, maybe when the Canucks are actually traveling. But for now, like, we might see a lot of Spencer Martin this weekend as well. Like, I wouldn't be shocked to see Martin get at least 2 of the starts, and then maybe 1 for Seelaws and 1 for DiPietro, because Martin's just been so good. And it's kind of unfortunate for those who wanted to see DiPietro take the next step.
Normally, I wouldn't trust somebody with 2 first names, but here is Spencer Martin pulling it off.
Yeah.
All right, jokes aside.
So, okay, that joke always fails. Yet you never stop.
No, just got to get one Ricky Bobby reference in every show. Jack Rathbone, he's always he's kind of the biggest topic around the Abbotsford Canucks. People wondering when he's going to be ready to come back up with the big club. What's up with Jack Rathbone right now? And I know he's obviously hoping to get another chance soon with the big club, but what's that looking like?
Health-wise, it should be full go for Jack Rathbone when he comes back on Thursday. I'll have 100% confirmation when I talk to Trent Cole on Wednesday about that, because they're not really doing any in-person media just yet, so I got a call with Cole on Wednesday and we'll be able to report that. But I'm expecting Jack Rathbone to be back. He went back to Massachusetts in Christmas time to kind of see his family, see his friends. Fellow Canucks prospect, Aiden McDonough, went out for dinner with him a couple of times. I asked McDonough on our show on the weekend if Jack was trying to push him in the right direction to maybe sign with the Vancouver Canucks this year, and didn't get a great response from Aiden McDonough when we asked him about signing with the Canucks. So I'll have to see where that goes, but I know that Jack wants to get him back, and he was able to spend some time with his family. I would expect him to be back to full health on Thursday, and hopefully we can see him get into three, if not all four, of these games this weekend.
It is Chris Faber covering the Abbotsford Canucks and giving us some insights as the Abbotsford Canucks get back to action this weekend, and doing a fine job producing this program. We, of course, can listen every weekend. Canucks warm-up leading into Canucks games. The Canucks warm-up with Chris Faber and David Quadrelli. Did Quad send you any leftovers from Christmas dinner or what?
No, nothing really. Like, Quad's sent me a picture of his plate, and it looked like a black and white photo. It was like turkey, gravy, mashed potatoes, and stuffing, and that was it.
Oh, wow.
That's all he had on his plate. He's a child.
Hmm. Yeah. You gotta spice it up a little bit more.
What, did you have lasagna with sour cream?
I kept the sour cream away. Attaboy. No, I actually used sour cream in the mashed potatoes this year.
Okay.
My mashed potatoes, like, I tell you, one day I'll bring some in maybe, but they're top of the league.
Mashed potatoes, probably the worst food to have, like, cold, though.
That's a good point.
Yeah, yeah. Cold, no, there's no
point. They're even hard to, like, you know, warm up later.
Yeah, no, they're great. Right off, you know, at the dinner.
Got to be fresh.
The next day, they take a hit.
Tough. Not like pizza.
It's like 30-second intervals in the microwave. A little bit of butter each time. Just not even like a full teaspoon. Just enough to kind of get it going. 30-second intervals, you're all good.
Okay. There you go. He's the...
It's the voice of a veteran right there.
He's covering the AHL team, and look at that, mashed potatoes expert, Chris Faber.
It is the People's Show, Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Earlier on, we spoke with Frank Saravalli about a lot of things going on with the Canucks right now. And most importantly, the GM search and whether or not it would take till the end of the month, as Rutherford has mentioned. Here is Frank Saravalli on the People Show.
I don't know that it's going to take that long. And I know that Jim Rutherford is certainly earnest in his desire to get someone in there. I mean, that's been stated. The holdup is really on, you know, multiple layers to COVID. And also, are we going to be doing these interviews and meetings in person? Should we be doing them on the phone or on Zoom, excuse me? And so there was some consternation about that. I think there still is with regards to COVID. But the other part of it was also having the Aquilini family available to participate and to get to know the candidates and be comfortable with the position. Jim Rutherford has, to my knowledge, kind of narrowed it down to a group of five, and that process to begin the interviews will begin in short order here now that we're into 2022. And my eyes are still focused squarely on Patrick Alvin from the Pittsburgh Penguins. I think he's the guy that, you know, of all the list of candidates that Jim Rutherford has that he's circled from his experience working together in Pittsburgh, and is someone that is certainly, you know, everyone that you talk to, and I've done my homework, I haven't had one person yet say a bad word about Patrick Alvin. Hard worker, diligent, smart, glued in and plugged in. And so certainly seems like, you know, for someone that has done the work and put the time in, that, you know, Jim Rutherford saying that this would be an entry-level position as a general manager, not hiring someone with that GM title experience, that he'd be a strong fit in that department.
Well, on the Alvin front, because he did work his way up through the organization, you know, having become a scout and then working his way up the front office, is there, you know, some information, some intel you can give on the individual himself? Because it's a name you hear, it's a name that you can, you know, we've read up about as well, but what are you hearing behind the scenes about him?
Just really, you know, a lot of what I said in terms of working your way up, putting in the time, and really taking on additional roles. You know, it wasn't just director of European scouting that he started with, then moving on to director of amateur scouting with the Pens before being promoted to assistant general manager. And he's the guy left holding the keys when Jim Rutherford ultimately ends up stepping aside from the Pittsburgh Penguins last January. So he's gotten significant experience. He's someone that, you know, what I'm curious about with the Penguins and Patrick Alvin is how much say does he have at this point with the Penguins and their front office structure? Ron Hextall comes in as general manager. Brian Burke is president of hockey ops. You know that Ron Hextall is leaning on a Chris Pryor there from his previous experience with him in Philadelphia, bringing him along to Pittsburgh. How involved is Patrick Alvin in the conversation, and how much say has he had? And so I think, you know, there'd probably be a fit that makes sense here for the Canucks moving forward to get a guy that could really, you know, use his voice a bit more maybe than he is at the moment.
It's been a few weeks that we've since we've heard about, you know, Scott Mellenby. Do you think he's somebody that is maybe being considered, or you know, just what's next for him potentially?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I've heard his name sort of pop up in the rumor mill. It would make sense, but at the same time, when I hear Jim Rutherford describe the role, I don't know that I would consider, you know, even though he's never had the position before, I don't know that I would consider Scott Mellenby kind of, quote, entry level, if that makes any sense. You know, this guy played so many games in the NHL, you know, almost 1,500 games, and has been an assistant GM for the last 7-8 seasons. Like, he's got so much experience. He's pretty much done everything aside from sit in the chair, and I know that's easy to say, but he's also been an assistant coach, a director of player personnel. Like, he's had all these different jobs and titles and opportunities around the NHL. I don't look at Scott Mellenby as an entry-level GM, though, given all the experience that he's had in this league.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Frank Saravalli. And Frank, Jim Rutherford last week mentioned that, you know, essentially, he's not fooled by the hot start. He's not going to let that alter his decision-making. And he's saying he's willing to be patient. We kind of know the role that Rutherford has had in the past. Known as a gunslinger, obviously a little bit different in Pittsburgh because they had a win now mantra, but being patient, is that something that you think Jim Rutherford can be? Because it feels as though, you know, when he likes a move, he's ready to make it almost immediately.
Yeah, but I think when making that comment and sort of reading between the lines, I think when I hear him say be patient, I don't know that that necessarily means not making any moves, but it more means in terms of the overall philosophy for the organization moving forward. I know the question was asked in the province, and I read the story, you know, does this team need a rebuild? Like, and it's not a traditional rebuild. They need help. They need to be boosted. And I think the way that he explained it was they need a better chance to be competitive in the regular season before sort of taking that next step. And so I think be patient means set your organizational philosophy, figure out what the team needs, and then begin to go and make changes and stick to the plan. That's what I think of when I hear him say be patient, because the other part of it is he doesn't want to be making significant franchise-altering moves that aren't in lockstep with his general manager. I sort of wondered about that with, you know, some other openings that have popped up. And I wonder about this with the Anaheim Ducks as well in their search for their next general manager. You want to make sure that the team that you're handing that GM has, you know, the ability to make decisions for himself and agrees with the approach and philosophy, because if his approach is different than yours, yet you've made all these moves that go in the opposite direction, you've tied the hands of that person right from Jump Street, and that doesn't work. So I think the patience, you know, at least for Jim Rutherford in a traditional sense, is, you know, maybe at least for the next couple of weeks until they can get this person hired, which will at least give them 6, 8 weeks potentially before the trade deadline comes on March 21st, where they can begin to make moves and piece this together in a way that, you know, all parties agree.
You know, we've spent so much time talking about Pettersson and his struggles and what that means mm-hmm. for the Canucks. But, you know, the one constant for this team ever since he showed up has been JT Miller. He's been a point-per-game guy since they traded for him from Vancouver. And, you know, I think everybody wonders what the future is for Miller, because he's got a year left on his contract after this upcoming season. And I'm trying to think about the dollar signs and what that might be. And it gets to be pretty expensive when you look at some comps. But I guess the wonder I have is, we see how good he is in Vancouver watching every single game. Does mm-hmm. the rest of the league know how good JT Miller is?
I think they do, just based on the number of calls that I think the Canucks had gotten as their season started to swirl down the drain. A lot of teams were wondering the same thing. You know, they can see JT Miller, see the constant production that he's had, 154 points in 156 games, I believe it is, since joining the Canucks. And he's been so good night in and night out, a guy that really has dragged this team into the fight. And so I think there were a number of calls that were made both to Vancouver that went unreturned. And then I think, you know, just calls in general, trying to check in on the situation with JT Miller. What's going on? Is he available? Is he going to be part of what the Canucks are doing long term? And I think when those calls went unreturned, that a lot of people, that's really when the smoke signal started to go out around the league that, you know, Jim Benning's time with the Canucks, as if everyone couldn't see it based on what was happening, was really coming to an end or coming to a close, because, you know, I don't know that he had the autonomy to really engage in those conversations towards the last days and weeks of his tenure. And the calls for Miller were unending. I had mentioned a couple teams that I believe had checked in on Miller, including one of his former teams in the New York Rangers. You know, Chris Drury, I think, you know, you look at what a fit he would be in that lineup at this point, you know, given the cap hit as well. Like, that's the real value in JT Miller, is not just the productivity, but the fact that you have that cap hit for one more year. I guess when you go to fit him back into the Canucks puzzle, yes, those comps would be pretty expensive, but the alternative is, what does your team look like? What do the Canucks look like if they don't have JT Miller in the lineup? Like, that's a significant piece to remove. So I think that's the tougher question to answer, is not what you pay JT Miller, but what is the cost on your team's performance and success if you don't have him?
Yeah, and it, you know, he's clearly the Canucks' best forward right now. He's playing center, so that's added even more value. You kind of look at Pettersson's cap hit, and if I'm Miller, like, there's no way, if the Canucks were to explore an extension with Miller this summer when it's eligible, like, there's no way if I'm
the
Miller
that
I'm,
probably starts with an 8.
Yeah, right? Like, you're looking at definitely more than Kevin Hayes. You're looking at more than Landeskog. You think it gets as high as an 8?
I'm guessing it's somewhere close to that.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had so many shortened seasons that, you know, it's hard. You got to go back and extrapolate out the numbers. But, you know, even going back to the last regular season we had in 2019-20, 72 points in 69 games, 27 goals. Like, he's on track for 25, 26 goals as it is now. You know, he's going to be an expensive player. I don't think there's any two ways about it. And the other part about Miller is that he's also been a consistent producer for the most part in the playoffs. You think back to the Canucks run in the bubble, you know, he was one of the guys that was, you know, starting the drink for that team. So I don't I don't see any sort of discount coming, but like I said, it's not necessarily about that cost and probably still a little bit premature, 6 months premature of really having the conversation. But you're going to – how do you fill that hole if you don't have him?
That is Frank Saravalli on the People Show earlier today. JT Miller. I really do think Miller's a player that is not as appreciated around the league as he is here. Probably isn't appreciated enough by Vancouver fans. Now, I have been one that has brought up the Miller trade idea.
On the panel with Murph and IMAC.
But it...
when IMAC almost smacked you.
It was never about Miller not being a great player. It's about the situation. And I don't think that situation has changed at all. And in fact, it's probably getting even more murky given what Frank told us today in that you're probably, like, if you're looking at that extension, you're maybe looking up like close to eight, if not in the eights. That's a pretty scary number given the Canucks' current cap situation.
This is going to be the biggest payday of JT Miller's career, and It's not going to be particularly close to his previous contracts. It's going to be at least, I would say, $2 million more per season.
Yeah.
And if you are a player that is close to 30,
mm-hmm.
you're looking for long-term security. At that point, he will be 30.
Yeah.
Right? You're looking for, what, probably a 6-7 year deal?
Yep. What's worrying about it, the Canucks have not been a team that prioritizes signing players a year in advance of free agency. And going into next year with Miller and Horvat as potential unrestricted free agents, man, that's a tough situation if that's something that happens. If that's a scenario that plays out, that is a tough situation to have going on in this market for next season.
One thing to keep in mind as well is that the salary cap, right?
Yep.
We had the forecast earlier on with the meetings.
Maybe it goes up $1 million. Maybe it doesn't anymore.
Well, the second half of the season is going to be very interesting because the reason that all these games are being postponed is to protect revenue. How about if you can't protect that revenue?
Yeah.
What happens next year? What happens the year after? Do those forecasts change? And how does that affect the Canucks is one team. But, you know, when you're doling out money,
mm-hmm.
you have to think about that. How much is coming in? We've been down this road before with COVID. So, you know, I think with the JT Miller contract and a potential Bo Horvat one, they're coming down the road at some point, whether JT's is here or elsewhere, we'll have to wait and see. The player has a huge role in that as well, right? Like, this is a positive story for the Canucks right now. JT Miller is an important player. We've seen how important he can be. There's a long time until he's an unrestricted free agent. And if you're JT Miller, don't you kind of milk that a little bit? If this is the big payday of your career, you probably want to milk that a little bit.
You definitely would. Why wouldn't you? You get to unrestricted free agency. It's where the payday comes. All right, that'll do it for the People's Show today. Back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. No Canucks games this week. Their Wednesday night matchup against the Islanders postponed to a later date. Their next day to get back on the ice in game action, Saturday against the Ottawa Senators, at least as of right now. For producers Chris Faber and Jamie Dodd, my co-host Randeep Janda, I'm Dan Riccio. This has been The People's Show on Sportsnet 650.